can't see. Hold on. Okay.
All right. You ready?
We're ready. Yep.
Awesome. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Tanya McKenzie coming to you from I Can't Make This Stuff Up podcast. And today we are welcoming Ingrid Ellis. She is here to talk to us about her awesome book called Life After the Down Low. And right now I want to go ahead and turn it over to her so she can introduce herself and her book and we can get it going. Hi, Ingrid.
Hi, Tanya. How are you?
Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me today. And I really, I'm looking forward to having this conversation with you.
Absolutely. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your book and how you came to write it.
Okay. Well, again, my name is Ingrid Ellis. I am the author of Life After the Down Low, which is a memoir after that I wrote in 2009. I published it in 2009, actually, originally. And it chronicles my journey after discovering that the person that I was married to was an undercover homosexual and accused of molesting children. And it was a challenging book to write simply because it was based on the reality that I was experiencing at the time. But it was necessary to write in order to continue the healing process for myself.
So authoring the book actually played a part in your healing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when the discovery was made, you know, you go through a gamut of emotions and, you know, not knowing how to navigate through life. And I have always taken to pen and pad when, you know, I've experienced different things, ebbs and flows in my life. And this wasn't any different. And what I did was I sought professional counseling because many times I'm an African American woman, and many times people in my community, in our communities, we don't seek help in terms of professional help because we figure, well, you know, we'll just deal with it ourselves. And we kind of just, you know, that's just kind of the norm. My background's in social work, so I've seen a lot of that. But I knew that this was not one of those dynamics that I would be able to traverse without help. I really needed it. So after I sought help, I went to counseling for about 10 months and I ran out of resources. So I had nothing left, and I still felt like there was still a bunch of residue left. And every day that I did go to counseling, I felt this tug of just things that I needed to just jot down and get out. And when I did write the book, I started writing it November 1st of 2008. And 90 days later, I was done.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So many people in situations like this, or any kind of situations where they have come out as someone that was either victimized or, you know, a victim of untruths and lies, they might not want to share such a secret, right?
Right.
They might make them feel embarrassed or almost lay blame on them some kind of way or make them feel a certain kind of way. What gave you the notion that sharing this would be okay? Because not everyone would feel that way.
It was so funny. It's so interesting that you asked me that question. Years and years and years ago, I started compiling stories from different people that I had met along the way. And the book is entitled My Life Don't Belong to Me. And so I'd always known that all of the experiences that I've had throughout my life, whatever they may be, I knew that they weren't just for me. I knew that somebody else was going to be able to benefit from how I managed through it. Or, you know, just what my thought process was or whatever. I knew that this would be my coping, my managing would be beneficial to somebody else. So I'd always known that. So when this situation came to be, it wasn't any different than any of the other experiences that I knew I had to share because other people needed to know how to heal from it. Now, I didn't know what the things would look like on the other side of it. I didn't know, you know, how I would be at this point in my life today, I didn't know what strength would look like. I didn't know how survival would look or what that would look like. But I did know that I needed to chronicle this so that somebody else would know that you don't have to go through this by yourself, even though I felt like I was. You don't have to, you know, be ignorant to, you know, the steps to take, because there's somebody else who's gone through it as well. And whatever the end result was ultimately going to be, I knew that I needed to chronicle it so that I could look back on it and I could grow from it, however I could grow and learn from it as well.
Many times people run from truth, right? Whether it be something that having to do with adultery or pedophilia or racism, so many different subjects we could actually cover, but to actually acknowledge these types of untruths leads you to then having to resolve them, meet them head on, you know, move forward with resolution. What inside of you, whether it's something that you got from your parents, your upbringing, or just a personal attribute, allowed you to be able to acknowledge this truth and move forward with resolution?
I have a strong faith in Christ, you know, and I've always been a fighter in that, you know, I've had multiple violations in my life. You know, I was violated at the age of 6. I was molested. I was raped at the age of 18. You know, these are things that I experienced along the way. So when I established a relationship with Christ, I knew that, and not to take this into a biblical, theological conversation, but just understanding if he could endure the cross and all the things that he did go through in order that I would be free, this was just my cross to bear. Whatever that was, this was my cross to bear. And that is how I managed through. That's how I was able to freely acknowledge, you know, what was going on, what the experiences were with this person that I was married to, and truthfully, you know, face myself and deal with whatever the realities were that I was being faced with, whatever that meant. I could deal with them honestly and, you know, ask the question, like, what did I miss? What can I fix? I don't want to have to go through this ever again. So what can I fix about me that I didn't see this coming? Or if I did see it coming, or if I did see any hint of it, what can I fix that if I see that again, that I don't dismiss it as being whatever, you know what I'm saying? So that resolve in me was deeply is my faith in Christ, understanding his pain. But then again, just knowing that, you know, I'm going to go through stuff, but because I'm going to go through stuff, you know, I have the faith and the fortitude to be able to push through it. And that's essentially what happened with me.
I like that. So you're going to read a passage to us today, right? A little bit about that passage and why you chose that particular passage.
Okay. Well, again, the book is entitled Life After the Down Low. And I chose the passage from the first chapter because it just really sets the tone for the entire book. Everything about it sets the tone for the entire book. The chapter is entitled The Beginning of the End. And I'll just start. I walked down the aisle nervously, being held on either arm by my oldest younger brother and my stepfather. My eyes locked on the man that would be my husband for what I thought would be the rest of my natural born life. I had only planned to do this thing called marriage once. I couldn't see anyone else in the sanctuary. I was smitten. When I reached him at the base of the steps, he draped my arm over him, and as soon as we began, he began to cry. I mean, hard, gut-wrenching sounds, a little doubled over even. I thought they were tears of joy, so I patted his hand to comfort him as it shone through my bended elbow. I can remember a plastered smile across my face, wishing he would stop. I peeked out of the corner of my eye to notice the bridesmaids, matrons, and some of the groomsmen joining the weeping chorale. I made sure to refocus my attention on the nuptials. After all, I was the bride, and even I wasn't crying in that fashion. Over the years, watching the video made for great laughs and walks down memory lane. It wasn't until a dozen years later that the spirit of understanding literally awakened me. Those tears weren't tears of joy. They weren't droplets of excitement to spend the rest of his life with me. Actually, they may have had nothing to do with me. Knowing what I know now, I believe they were tears of pain, anguish, guilt, and confusion, cries from the depths of his soul as he bargained with his spirit man of the magnitude of deception that would forever be the backdrop of our covenant. Those boisterous cries may very well have been pleas for help from God, the same God who said, "If you confess your sins, I am faithful and just to forgive you and cleanse you from all unrighteousness." The same Lord who provided a ram in the bush, a way of escape for Abraham, and would have done no less for Bobby. You see, I learned the night before we married, the evening before I was to consummate my lifelong partnership after battling my loins for years, the man of my dreams, my quote-unquote Prince Charming, had propositioned a male minor for sex after our rehearsal dinner. So those tears were valid. They just weren't applicable for the occasion, and nobody knew but him and the 17-year-old confused kid to whom he is said to have exposed himself while driving him home. So I had no idea that the day we said I do was actually the beginning of the end. The window of destruction was wide open from the moment we agreed to be married. Our union was never protected from the wiles of the enemy. It was susceptible to any and everything, no filter. It was one that the adversary would later have free rein for target practice. We never stood a chance.
Wow. That was pretty deep. What the audience may not know is that you guys also have a child, right?
Yes, yes.
So talk to me a little bit about the advice you would give someone that has a child going through any type of family breakup or reconstruction.
Well, my son was adopted when he was 10 months old, so he wasn't birthed from my loins. And I believe that, you know, that is by design. I believe it wasn't that we weren't, quote unquote, trying. There were moments where we were actively trying to, you know, bring a child into the world. But for some reason, God did not allow me to bear his child. And I have a clearer understanding as to why that is, you know, because they're, you know, with my child having been chosen, my son, you know, there wasn't such a big rumble in terms of parental care. But the best advice I would give to someone who is experiencing a traumatic event is not to dismiss your children. You know, even though he was such a young boy at the time, he was a little baby, he was a baby, he was a toddler. And even though he was a toddler and didn't have any understanding of what was going on, he still had feelings. And so, you know, he was going through his own depression. He was losing weight because every day he would vomit, you know, because the life that he did know, you know, having this intact family as he knew it, this quote unquote father figure who was in the home. We had purchased a home here in Los Angeles. You know, by all accounts, we had the ideal life. You know, the person that I was married to was a youth pastor. He was a principal of school. So it looked good from the outside. But my son, you know, that was the life he knew. But when this happened, there was an immediate interruption from his life. We went from having what seemed to be a stable home and situation to moving with, you know, my parents and, you know, bouncing between putting the sofa and love seat together to make a full size bed to the cots that we had to, you know, sit up and break down to, if that was uncomfortable, then a blow up mattress that, you know, slept, you know, comfortably two or three people. It was a lot for him. That wasn't the life that he had signed up for. And that wasn't the life that, you know, I, you know, imagine that would be ours, you know, ultimately either, but he was going through his thing too. And so the best advice that I would give to someone is, do not dismiss your children. Don't just assume because they're children that they don't know. don't just assume that just because they're children that they don't know, or that you, that they, that, that because they're not verbally expressing their discontent or, you know, what have you, that they are not aware and that they're not internalizing this and that it's not impacting them as well, because it impacted him in a huge way. And, you know, had I been dismissive, which, you know, honestly, Tanya, some of the time, sometimes, you know, I'm trying to lick his wounds, I'm trying to lick my own wounds. It was hard, you know, and I'm not going to front and be and say to you, well, you know, that was the easy part. That was hard because you got two people whose wounds you have to tend to, you know, right. And on any given day I had to figure out, okay, whose wound am I going to handle today? You know, he's throwing up and I'm over here, you know, trying to handle this. And all right, let's get some paper towels and let's get it together. Come on. We, you know, didn't have a whole lot of time to, you know, but I didn't want to be dismissive and I didn't want to, you know, rob him of his grief as well.
Right. Tell me, what is your current relationship with your ex?
None.
At all?
No. No, you know, I'm a loyal person. So, you know, that what I thought was friendship, what I thought was a covenant, what I thought was, you know, wasn't. And, you know, that was the worst way that you could, you know, break a covenant, is not just through the choice of sexual preference, but, you know, the criminal activity as well. I can't, you know, we don't entertain that.
What is his current situation? Are you able to say?
I'm not, because there is a community of people who are very watchful, you know, in terms of what's going on and his current goings on. So I'd refrain from making any notations about that, just because there are some eyes that are watching. But we've been very prayerful about how we approach just, you know, different things that go on. So I'll leave it there, and, you know, so that we don't compromise the prayers and the things that are going on that God is doing.
So that begs the question, will there be a follow-up? If not of this story, do you have anything else coming up?
There is a follow-up. You know, life is my follow-up. My follow-up is, you know, what I realize is that God wanted so much for me, and that all the, you know, okay. So that's such a great question. There was so many dreams and visions and ideas and hopes and things that I had stored up in me. And while married, a lot of those things made an introduction. So I wrote and illustrated a children's book called Dare to Dream Ambrosia, about a little girl who explores the world through dream. And from that book came other characters. Ambrosia met Papaya, who's from Ethiopia, and she met Rusty, who's from Panama, and just on and on. So all of these things became like made an appearance early on when, you know, I was married, but they never could come to fruition. It just never could come to fruition. It always seemed like there was something blocking the creativity or the birthing of it. And it wasn't until after this situation was exposed that I heard a whisper, and it was as clear as I'm talking to you, that I couldn't do that then. It couldn't happen then, because there was an interruption, you know. And so I said, okay, all right, you know, so what does that mean? Like, what does that mean for now? And so all of the things, Tanya, that I had aspired to do, all of the books and the ideas and the inventions and all the things that I have aspired to do are coming to fruition now. And it wasn't until after I was healed, and everybody asked me, what does healing look like? Well, healing is a process, but it wasn't until I was able to really fully embrace the healing process that I was able to then reintroduce myself to my dreams and dust them off and make them a reality. And that's what's really exciting. So, you know, last year I reintroduced Life After the Download in its bound copy. I did a first draft of it, and we got to go back and do some edits. I reintroduced Dare to Dream Ambrosia, which became the 20th year anniversary. I was like, oh my God, it's been 20 years, you know? Year, I have so many books inside of me, which are fantastic. I've got a book called The World According to Noah, Conversations with My Autistic Son, because my son is autistic. He's high-functioning Asperger's, but autistic nonetheless. And so those are the things, that's one of the books that I have that should be released this year. It's a bunch of the conversations that he and I would have over the years that had no idea it would become a book, but it's got his artwork in there and the conversations that we've had as his language began to mature. I've got, you know, just a host of things. I've got tons and tons of books inside of me, probably another dozen or so, you know, and I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited about, I have a greeting card line that I'll be, I tested the market over the summer, last summer, and I just got some feedback from an organization called Buy Black Movement. And so I'm, you know, going to be working with them to, you know, launch my greeting cards across the world through their marketers. It's nonstop. And I'm so excited about that because, again, these are dreams that I've had on the shelf for years now, because either the resources weren't there to make them a reality, or, you know, just the hope of whatever it was that I needed to do just was dampened. So now that I have hope again, now that I have, you know, I'm in a much better place, you know, these things now have the ability to show themselves and make their appearances.
Right. Very good. Well, let the audience know how they can, one, purchase your book, and two, stay in touch with you.
Okay, very good. Well, you definitely contact me through my website, and the website's address is www.thelandofellis.com. That's thelandofellis.com.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you sharing your book, your experience, your wise words, your advice with us about this very sensitive topic. Look forward to hearing more from you, and I hope you guys all go out and grab the book. Grab it, read it, let's talk about it, let's share it, let's discuss, and move forward in a positive fashion.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you again, Ingrid, for talking to us today, and we look forward to hearing more from you.
Thank you, Tanya. And I really do thank you for inviting me to this platform. This is my desire to reach women, to reach men, and to shed light on the ability to see and to trust your dreams and trust your instinct and trust your the visions and write things down so that they help you, but they don't get away from you. So I really appreciate you for allowing me this platform to be able to share with individuals, whoever is willing to listen, not to dismiss themselves, not to, you know, shortchange yourself or think that, you know, what you're hearing is not valid or what you're seeing is not true, but that make note of it. And, you know, eventually the puzzle will become very clear in terms of what's in front of you, but don't dismiss it. And I thank you for this platform to be able to do that, to share that.
You're so welcome. We're blessed by you. Hey, have a good rest of your day. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tanya.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.